I'd like to welcome on the line to Weekend Breakfast, Mr. Terence Bell, the publisher of Our Story at the SA Heritage Publisher. Good morning, Terence. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. And of course, it always helps to click on the line so we can hear you. We heard the latter part of your greeting, but really, really do appreciate your time. Terence, if you could run us through the our story and the work being done by the SA Heritage Publisher, how did this come about?
Well, to start at the beginning, about 7 or 8 years ago, I was visiting friends in Vuani, a rural village in Vembe, in Limpopo. Mm-hmm. Two of those friends were Chitsonga speakers, one of Amashangana heritage, Ngobeni, and Maluleke Vatsonga, mm-hmm. and Konanani Matiwa, who is a Tshivenda speaker. And they were asking me about the story of the first contact between their ancestors and the role of the Portuguese in those meetings. Obviously, the Portuguese had a very heavy influence. They landed in Mozambique in 1435, which was about 200 years and a bit before Van Riebeck ever arrived in the Cape. And the other thing that happened is technology on cell phones, where you can see where you are and get a temperature or weather report, yes. had just come out. And I noticed that Vuani was referred to as Lokati van Taban. And I asked about who Taban was, and I teased them because they weren't aware, by saying, you know, it surprises me that people who are so respectful of the ancestors don't really know what those ancestors did. And Konanani Matiwa challenged me. She said, Terence, you know a little bit of all of our languages, you know a lot of the history of our people, and you know books and schools. Why don't you do something about it? And the next day we visited Zata to sit among the stones and think about this. Zata is a village that was built by Toyando, one of the descendants of Bivanyika. And so the series was born. That's how it all started.
I mean, what? First of all, what an amazing and lovely undertaking. But I want to know if it was in any way intimidating, because you are looking at the people, the clans, the events that shaped Southern Africa, from Shaka to Batiwane to the rebellion of Langa Libalele, Dingiswayo, who we'll talk about now.
Yes.
You know, the magnitude of this undertaking, I guess you had to start at the beginning. Where did you decide the beginning was?
Well, because the conversation took place in Vuani, and because it involved people I've mentioned, I had to start with the Battle of Mhlathuzi River, a battle which took place about 200 years ago, and which the outcome of which fundamentally affected Southern Africa. Mm-hmm. The battle was between the Amandwandwe, Zwide Kalanga, Shoshangan, Kakumalo, and Zwangindaba Kajele. And they were fighting against the Mthethwa, whose army was then headed by Shaka Kasenza Vakona. Mm-hmm. It was the murder of Dingiswayo that led to that battle. And fighting with Shaka against his own grandfather was Mzilikazi Kamashobane. The Amandwandwe were defeated. And in a nutshell, Zwangindaba fled through Mozambique into present-day Zimbabwe, brought down the Barozwi Empire, and he and his people settled in Zambia, Malawi, and Tanzania, the Ngoni, as they now call themselves. Of course, Shoshangan founded the Gaza Kingdom, and Mzilikazi Kamashobane, after the battle, had a fallout with Shaka, and then left, and obviously journeyed through South Africa and up into Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. So literally people are living in areas today as a result of the outcome of that battle. And then from there we followed the characters, Shoshangan, his son Muzila, the grandson Gugulani, then obviously Mzilikazi Kamashobane, four books on his trek through Southern Africa, Moshweshwe, and so on.
Yeah. So I also understand that there's work that you are currently transcribing, written in Indigenous languages. Talk to me about just finding this old material, how you treat it, how the translation process has worked for you, and what do you plan to do with it all?
Well, you know, obviously we were doing research on new books that we wanted to publish. And came across this documentation. There are 891 writings from 187 different authors. And in all of the then written official Indigenous languages, I should point out that at that time, Siswati and Zindabele were not yet written languages.
Okay.
So the stories about Amndebele and about Siswati are in isiZulu. Now, as an example, I'm very familiar with most of the Abanguni clans and a number of Sotho, Tswana and Sotho-Salibuwa clans. But mention was made of a group called the Mfatla Ndebele, just as an example. And I've never, ever heard of them. Anyway, to cut a very long story short, it appears that the Mfatla Ndebele were a group of Amandebele that married into the Bakhatla, Bakhatla Bakhafela.
Yes.
And then Nguni father named Mfatla. Now, we have just started the translations, and it is spellbindingly interesting. There is so much information that we didn't know about. Bear in mind that people who wrote these writings in their hand, by hand, before it was typed up, were teachers, possibly principals, etc. We'd like to do some more investigation to see if we can find out more about them. But their parents and grandparents would have, and certainly their grandparents would have been alive when Shaka was alive. So the oral tradition then was very strong.
Exactly.
It's much weaker now, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah.
And so the information that we have from them is extremely valuable because it goes back so far.
Were the people that you interviewed in the process of putting together these books, were they, not if not loath, then reluctant to hand over this material? Because, yeah, were they reluctant at all to part with it, or did they know that it was in safe hands?
No, I think that there was an awareness that we were extremely serious about the work that we're doing.
Sure.
And we're going to use this material, I think, in two ways. Clearly, it feeds into the research that we are doing on new titles in the Our Story series. But we are also looking at making them available more widely at the lowest possible cost.
Exactly.
So that people can have access to stories of their ancestors.
Yeah.
I think that that's extremely important. One of the things that we've noticed, we launched an active Facebook page in April, and that's already grown to about 23,000 followers. Is everybody saying, well, now, what about the Tlamini? What about the Bakhaka? What about the Bakhapi?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So it goes on.
So this is an opportunity in many ways to build a sort of a more communal folk history project where we start, you know, all those people asking, what about the Tlaminis? Then, you know, they can start to submit any stories or insights that they may have and build on that for posterity.
Absolutely. And I mean, it goes even a little further. Once we have completed this awareness creation campaign for our new titles, as you know, in partnership with City Press, they are doing extracts of our new books. What we want to try and do is to publicize these writings on our Facebook page, appealing to people who may live in the areas where these authors lived. To see, are the families still in that area? Can these people be traced? Because in many instances, we know what schools they taught at. Do those schools still exist? I don't know. But there's a mountain of work, hopefully, that we can get done involving people in rural areas, because most of these writers wrote from you know, a rural base.
Yeah. So you, before I have two final questions, and really, really quickly. I mean, such important and interesting work that you're doing, and I wonder where, beyond making sure that it is as available, as affordably as available as possible by way of the price point, What is your vision for making sure that, first of all, this information never gets lost, these stories are widely circulated and told and understood, and also just saved and preserved for posterity? Because, you know, I can easily point out initiatives in many other countries where we know that there are repositories of this kind of knowledge and history that is, you know, saved and that is saved and revered for national consumption, for everybody's consumption. You know, where what is our equivalent, I guess, and how do we elevate, you know, the preservation of our histories?
Well, just to talk a little bit about what we intend doing with these writings. Currently, the writings exist in handwritten form, and they were then typed up in the 1930s and 40s.
Okay.
The typed pages have subsequently been scanned in. Not of all of the writings, only about half of them. And the half that we're talking about will probably amount to somewhere in the order of 20 to 22,000 A4 pages.
Sure.
So we are currently having the typewritten versions in the indigenous languages typed into Word so that we can manipulate that text. And it's being done word for word, including words that are in the old orthography.
Okay.
And then we are translating that into English because, you know, I'm a strong believer in an ancestor of one is an ancestor of all.
Mm.
We need to know one another's history. If we're serious about social cohesion, the best way to build that, in my opinion, is to creating a more multilingual society and one that understands something about its own heritage and the heritage of other South Africans.
Sure.
So that is why we are translating them into English, because we want people who may be English and isiZulu speakers to be able to find out what happened amongst the Botswana Basutu clans,
yeah,
and vice versa. We are also talking at the moment to the National Heritage Council, who are extremely interested in working with us. In fact, I was beginning to do a proposal to them, as they've requested, to discuss how we can best deal with converting these materials into a form which would be readily available, and how these will be then preserved.
Lovely, lovely stuff. And very quickly and finally, Terence, talk to me about the extracts that were chosen for to be published with City Press on the young Dingiswayo, Dingiswayo then called Kotongwana. What did you choose and why?
Obviously, we are looking at trying to extract from the materials the most, the key moments, the key issues, et cetera, et cetera. Now, to be honest, because we've worked on so many of these, I can't remember what the extract covered.
Mm-hmm. And who can blame
obviously
you?
the importance of Dingiswayo is that we are publishing a series of books on Shaka.
Mm.
And as we said, it is impossible to properly understand Shaka's attitude, his approach, without understanding his relationship with Dingiswayo. Because Dingiswayo was the father figure that Senzo Rakgona never was.
Mm.
And so, you know, obviously it's important that people understand that when they set out and start reading these three or four books that there will be on Shaka.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful undertaking that you've tasked yourself with there, Terence. Thank you for the beautiful work, and really appreciate your time this morning. Looking forward to reading the books themselves.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Always a pleasure. That's Terence Bell, the publisher of Our Story series at the SA Heritage Publisher. And of course, just hop online and you can check out the collections themselves. A lovely investment if you've want these for yourself in terms of the collections and the story packs. They are available as a complete collection or individually, of course. And if you've got a young person in your life or a child, children, grandchildren who you want to make sure understands and appreciates the history of Southern Africa.